The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 186, USB booting?
Fresh looks.
Oh, yeah, fresh looks.
Booting. USB booting.
Or booting from booting from USB.
Yes.
All right.
Are you booting from USB?
You booting, we're booting, we're all booting.
I think you get the idea.
Right.
That's right. And this is
Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
Right. I don't know what happened to me there, Tony, but normally I'm the one that kind of remembers it. I didn't remember that at all.
It's all right.
Second episode, as long as somebody remembers it, I think right. We'll be all right. It's like the second episode in a row.
Yeah, no problem.
Of course, they're all done on the same day, so I think that might be a reason why.
Right.
So so this episode, we're taking a fresh look at booting from USB. And this, of course, is a result of an email that we got from one of our listeners, Bill, last episode, or that we talked about last episode. And we did in-depth research. we mined our minds.
That's right. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like I've already used quite a few tools to create mm-hmm. them and figured out what works best for me, and same for Tom and Mary. You've done research, so and mm-hmm. well, you've used them in the past too. So
I have.
It works out pretty good. This was a good topic that we could just throw in. Since yesterday, we're like, oh, what were we supposed to do?
Yeah. Behind the scenes is not pretty here.
I think what we did is really called upon some existing, the existing knowledge base that we have.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Tom, we're looking at you. No.
Oh, no, don't look at me. You know what, though? Getting back to the topic, though, we use bootable Linux distributions every single day at our office. And, mm-hmm. There's been a few of them before that are for some forensics and for some other recovery tools that are on there, but just in general, we use the bootable Ubuntu. That's how we rescue Windows.
Right off USB.
Right off USB. That's how we rescue Windows computers on a daily basis. Windows computers, apparently, with this forced upgrade to Windows 10, guess what? It doesn't always work. And when they don't work, they bring them to my store. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they go is nobody backs anything up. So we pop in a Ubuntu and connect to the hard drive, figure out where all their files are, back them all up. And, this is daily. It's great, all these different Linux distributions. And I've also heard of a lot of people taking them to the library with them because they don't trust the library computers.
Yeah.
So they bring in their own little USB sticks, pop them in there, and boot them up.
I'm surprised that the library security hasn't taken the step to disable the USB.
Apparently, they don't have the highest tech people at the library. So.
Right. Yeah, and it wouldn't be a program that they can install on the computer because you reboot, and now you're outside of their operating system. So they would have to go into the BIOS and disable USB devices.
Well, that can't be that hard. And then you password protect the BIOS so that enterprising customers can't go in there and...
they do.
But the problem is most keyboards and mice are USB now. So now you start disabling USB.
Yep.
The keyboards and mice and other devices that might require. I don't know.
I haven't seen any,
but I could see how a library would require you to scan your library card to be able to get in. And that would be a USB device and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of different things.
All right. Well, I guess that was shot down.
But there are plenty of distributions out there, and so go ahead and start with Tony.
Yeah, actually, I think Mary, you could probably talk a little bit more about it. All I know is that the standard tool for booting from USB is the UNetBoot.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I've used that a number of times, but actually, what I'm going to do it because my initial angle with this was to go and take a look at some of the tools that if you've got somebody who's using Windows but is wanting to kind of take a little exploration into the land of Linux, there are actually a couple of open source Windows tools out there for people to use if that's their preference. And I'm going to just go ahead and talk. And one of the reasons why I'm mentioning Rufus, because that's one that's, and I believe that's licensed under GPL v3, is because when I took a look at the Cube's release, their suggestion and that particular distro is very security conscious, but their suggestion was to use Rufus. To go ahead and transfer the ISO to you know, using DD, of course, transferring the ISO to a USB stick. Yeah. So, one thing that they had mentioned is if you're going to be using that is you want to make sure that you're selecting DD image, because that way it's going to do the DD, which is the, you know, that direct block by block, I think, transfer of information.
Okay.
So,
you know, another good reason to use a Windows device, say you don't have a Linux computer to use, so you need to create that USB device. But just, you know, a lot of laptops today don't have a CD drive in it.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to burn a CD to install either Windows or Linux? And so now you have, now creating a USB boot drive, it actually uses Linux in the background to boot to either a Windows ISO or a Linux ISO, you know, and say you're walking over to a netbook to install it on a mm-hmm. netbook. It doesn't have a CD drive, and it's a lot easier to create a USB boot than it would be to go and buy a external CD drive and burn the CD and try to
read
it.
You rewrite so much faster off of a USB. And just like in the last episode, we talked about the Dell and her new XPS. There's no CD-ROMs on those, so that is how you load them, is off of USB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's also a fun way to try out a distro and see if it works and see what the problems are with the distro. I've used that before to try and test hardware compatibility, and that's how I discovered I had some problems. KDE Plasma not liking my triple screen setup was off the, it kept failing on there unless I unplugged the screens. Apparently, at the time I tried it, there were some problems with the video cards, and they had a lot of workarounds in that, and I just decided to skip it, but I want to re-explore, because I really like the look of the KDE Plasma desktop, and that's what I'll do. There, you know, when the new releases of Kubuntu comes out, I'm going to give it a try, and I'll throw it on a USB, and, you know, away you go. So kind of, it's a good insight into that.
Yeah, nice.
And a lot of people realize both pfSense and FreeNAS, FreeNAS is the preferred install, is installed to a USB. So when you build a FreeNAS box, which is the open source network attached storage server, they actually have you install it on a persistent USB, which is really convenient because it's not on a spinning hard drive, so it's generally pretty solid. They also are using the BSD system, so they do the splits on there. And it's kind of cool. When you load an update, it flips which partition's bootable. That way, if you don't like the update and you want to roll backwards, it just resets the other one. So it writes to every other partition when it does this. And then you can choose which slice is bootable or not for rollback and persistence. And it does this both in pfSense and in FreeNAS.
Nice.
So it's another easy way to do it. You can get, if you want to clone them, just like Mary said, you use DD, and you can create a duplicate very easily. Pull out the thumb drive, duplicate it to another. Now you have a complete duplicate of your operating system for your firewall or for your FreeNAS, and ready to go. So if there's a hardware failure or failure with that USB drive, you've already cloned it, and it's very simple to do.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And in fact, that they just plug in the back of the computer. If you type in industrial thumb drives, you can actually find that there's a couple of companies out there making some that are, like, you can run them through the washing machine. They're made very, very well, very, very strong, and they will stay persistent with your data on there. And we buy the industrial ones. They're not that, they're like $25. You're not even talking some major, they're more expensive than the $15 one by $10. And they, you know, you can get some of these higher quality ones because you don't need a ton of space on there. And I like how small they are. You know, they're the keychain, they're real small, just enough left that you can pull it back out of the USB slot. They look like the little mouse transceivers.
Oh, yeah. I have seen those.
Yeah. Those are the ones we get.
Yeah. That's a nice thing. If you're going to leave it in there permanent, then it's small. It doesn't get knocked off or get broken.
Right.
Or say if you have a bigger USB drive and you're worried about that, you can get – there's a little cable so you can go from the header on the USB. And instead of plugging or putting it in one of the card slots, well, you could just leave it on the inside of the case of the computer, plug your USB into that, your flash drive, and then close the case. And there you have nothing external of the computer for that USB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the boards, the smaller boards, do support plugging USB on the inside. They actually have the USB soldered to the board internally, so you can push it right into the board, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
I suppose you can put keyloggers on that too.
Ooh,
yeah.
But if you ever want to use a public machine, it's nice to keep a USB thumb drive ready. There's ways you can create. There's a few tools out there so you can create a persistent USB install. It's kind of a hack because by design, USB was designed to be read-only and just push things into memory. But there's a couple different distros out there.
Live CDs.
Live CD install.
Yeah.
But it's a live USB.
Right.
And you can keep that on your keychain. So if you go, hey, I want to use this computer to log in, but I don't know who else has access to this computer. I'm worried about the operating system on there. You can plug in, boot off the USB, and have all of your stuff already on there. So that's definitely pretty cool.
Yeah, that is nice. Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
I think our stream died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it just suddenly just flashed off, and I thought I could... Is this plugged in?
It better be.
Okay, it must have just... It went to sleep.
Oh.
It should have had its coffee. Hey, we're still good.
It'll go back on in a second.
Yeah, we're good.
It says broadcasting, so...
Yeah,
all right.
We're good.
Yeah, hopefully it was just the...
Hopefully that black screen, we're the only ones that saw it.
Right.
Hey, but
it just
you know
went
what?
To sleep for a minute.
We're good.
All right.
See, and that's my philosophy in life. Everything will work out. See?
Yeah.
And it just did.
But I think it sets to 2 hours, so I think that's proof we were talking for over 2 hours.
Good thing we're on the other episode.
Right.
We'd be in trouble. But anyway, so Tom, that's pretty informative information you've been sharing with us. Well, by the way, too, I wanted to mention along these same lines, you know, Phosphorus just had a Indiegogo campaign that concluded. And I did donate at the, I want to say the $20 level. So what that entitled me to, maybe it's $25, but anyway. What that entitled me to was a little USB stick with my distro of choice from amongst several that they had. And I just got it yesterday. I haven't had a chance to plug it in yet, but my distro of choice, can you guess what it was?
Come on, Drew.
How did you know? But anyway, I think it was a long-term support version. So I'm going to go ahead and give that a try. But yeah, it was pretty cool. So and it just goes to show you how easy it is to, you know, get these things set up. I myself have used U-Bootin, I believe it's called.
U-Netbootin.
U-Net, okay.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Vladimir Putin. But anyway, I have used that, and I've used it successfully to transfer. But I've also done the manual approach where you DD it, and then you kind of mm-hmm. fiddle around with it a little bit to get it up and bootable.
There's a few issues with using DD straight on, unless the image
I'm sure
that
I found
you're DDing.
Them all.
Right. If the image you're DDing is created to be a USB boot, then mm-hmm. there's no problem. Just use that. But if you're trying to DD a CD ISO onto a flash drive, it will work, but there can be issues because sometimes the CD image is referring back to a CD drive to grab info.
Okay.
Where now you're on a USB or an internal hard drive, and mm-hmm. so it might crash on you. So that's where I ran into those problems a few years ago, and that's when I started using Multisys. And I've actually run through quite a few different ones, like Yummy. I've used Yummy, and there's another one that's deprecated now that I can't find the reinstall for it. But what it does, it creates an actual grub boot menu.
Okay.
And then if I want to add an ISO to it, I just copy the ISO over, edit the grub boot menu,
mm-hmm.
and then reboot, and now it's working. So
nice.
And that's the old one. I'm trying to look, see if it's still on here.
While you talk about that or while you look for that, I just wanted to mention too, Ubuntu has their own bootable USB stick. Application. And it is called the Ubuntu Startup Disk Creator. And I personally have never tried it, but I was kind of curious if either one of you have tried that.
I have not.
It kind of limits you as far as it says here. It allows you to create a drive for Debian or any other Debian-based OS for which you have a CD or ISO image. So there's some limitations there, but I know that U-Netbootin, I think you can... I think you've got a little more flexibility as far as what you use. But I guess it sort of makes sense that if it's from Ubuntu, it would be probably focused on more Debian-based. I don't know, Tom, have you ever tried that at all?
Not as much that, but there is another distribution called Porteus. And mm-hmm. it's a It's kind of cool. If you go to build.porteus, porteus.org, they let you build on the fly a custom USB persistent version of their software. And it includes things like which browser. So it's creating a lean version. So you choose the browser, choose the some of the things, whether or not you're running an AMD or NVIDIA, whether or not you want to put a GUI or text, whether or not you want to be a kiosk mode, or some of the other custom features, and it creates a persistent USB image so you can just boot right up and have all the settings that you want specifically in there. So there's definitely some neat stuff on that. So if you wanted to, you know, feel
set up
secure,
an internet cafe.
Set up an internet cafe, set up a coffee on there.
Yeah, you know, if you wanted to that approach definitely gives you more control over the user experience, as far as that goes, and it makes sense. And I know we've talked about Porteus. I did a review of it probably, a couple years ago, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's still being developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in my case, the reason I started using them is because I wanted to be able to have one drive that I can boot many tools off of.
Sure.
Because there's certain live CDs that, at the time, it was all live CDs that people were using, techs that I knew were using. And so it was like, everybody swear, you know, all the Ultimate Boot CD is the best one. And then somebody else would be like, oh no, the Rescue CD.
Is that one tool to rule them all? What was that from?
Yeah.
What movie was that from?
The Ring.
The Ring. The, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, Lord. Anyway, so I wanted to create one that I could boot off of, because I knew there's an antivirus that I really liked, you know, and, for a live CD, but I didn't want to carry just that CD around. So I created my thumb drive, and the Windows version was called XBoot. And I would just throw the ISO on there. It had a tool where if you said, use this ISO, then it would go through and had a script that it'd work out. So it would create the persistent, data for you if you're doing a Linux boot or different things like that. So XBoot was one for that I used in Windows. And the one that I use now, because I, from my Linux computer all the time, is it's called MultiSys. And both of those, I'll have the links in the show notes. But it does the same thing where it goes through, you copy, you drag and drop the ISO right into the little prompt on the window. And it goes through and it splits that out and creates a boot menu for you. And so I have one disk. Or one, my, it's a terabyte hard drive I actually use. And I have like an 8 gig fat partition at the beginning for this boot. And I have, or maybe it's 20 gigs, I don't know, off of a terabyte. I didn't really pay attention how much I put. But anyway, so I put on, I have Linux Mint. I have a couple other Linux distros I was playing around with. I have a Windows 7 install. I have Spinrite. I have
Gparted.
Like three other ones. Yeah, Gparted and Parted Magic I use on there.
Okay,
and
sure.
CloneZilla. And, you know, I have, you know, 10 different tools I have on it. And depending on the situation, what I'm doing, I can just boot to one or the other. And I'm always just
and
carrying around
things.
The one drive, and I have everything that I need. Oh, and the AVG antivirus is the live CD that I use.
Yeah, and it's nice because you can buy a 64 gig USB 3 high speed thumb drive for under $30.
Exactly.
You know? So you can fit tons of ISOs on there for lots of different things. It's not all the ISOs are even a full, 300-400 megs. Some of them, like CloneZilla, is really small.
And right.
He just has one. I imagine AVG antivirus is probably pretty small as well.
Right. Yeah. It's under a gig or 100. I think it's 80 megs or something. Anyway, but the reason that I went with a terabyte drive is because the second partition on there is where when I use CloneZilla or Parted Magic, that's where I throw all the images.
Ah.
So I'll image a computer I'm working on before I start doing, you know, destructive work on it. So if I have to go back, and because I do it so little, I don't want to put the time into creating a whole server backend to doing all my backups and stuff.
Yeah.
And I know, Tom, you have a more professional setup for that because you guys do it so much.
We're using the whole imaging server that we have in ours running off of our FreeNAS box, Crucible on there. There's a review on my blog to, if you want to learn more about it. But something else, since you're a resident Kali Linux forensics, have you played with the Kali Linux forensics mode? Is that one of the options you've tested?
I have not.
Yeah, it's a special mode for Kali Linux to allow it to dig deeper without everything's read only, of course. So you're doing forensics investigations, so you can, you know, file recovery and things like that. So there's another feature on here, and I know that there's similar things that government agencies with three letters use to boot off the USB and check your drive without showing any write access to your drive, so you wouldn't know your computer was ever touched.
Oh,
that's kind of what the concept is. It's everything's read only, and just go through it. So there's, it's pretty cool too. Probably it added on there. It's an option for Kali Linux.
Nice.
Called forensics boot mode.
Boot mode. I remember looking through, and they have a bunch of different, like limited editions. Not as in limited edition, like it's only going to be around a little bit, but limited as in, if you want just the top 10 tools, or if you want just the Wi-Fi hacking tools or whatever, not hacking, their penetration testing tools.
Yeah, and I imagine it comes with, like, I didn't look, I imagine scalpels on there. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it's a file recovery tool for recovering deleted documents off a hard drive. I know it comes with test disk, too, is another one.
Yeah, test disk is one. What I used. And there's another one I've used. I can't remember the name, but it's based on DD. But yeah.
They're good for taking apart the hard drive as far as that. So and we know we use test disk way more than we should because nobody backs up anything.
Yeah. Autopsy is supposed to be a really good program too. I haven't gotten into it, but it's pretty good.
Maybe that would be a fun review too, is go through all the different tools to recover files because, well, that's a popular we do it a lot.
Right. Cool.
That would be. That would be, so. One thing I noted, and this was, I think this came from Make Use Of. They did a comparison of ISO to USB tools, and, you know, again, this is more from the Windows perspective, but Yummy and also Rufus were two of the fastest, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I've used Yummy in the past, and it works good. I just, I like the multi-sys setup better. All these tools, I forgot to tell you, all these tools I found from that Pendrive Linux, website.
Yeah, that's an excellent, resource for this, this type of information.
Right. yeah, and there's so many tools on there, it's hard to find what you're looking for, or it's hard to differentiate between them unless you take time to read through them. And, you know, some are easier to install than others. Some have different options than others.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is when I was looking for it, I specifically was searching for multi-system kind of installs.
Yeah. And it kind of begs for a database application where you have a drop-down and it takes you through your use case where you would say, this is what I'm trying to do. And then from that, you'd have a couple of other drop-downs then. The final result of which would be a list of tools, and it'll probably be a short list. It might just be one or two that would be the tools best suited for the approach that, you know, what you're trying to do as far as creating a bootable USB. I mean, I've done it a few times, and then I've had problems with it too, where I've tried to do it, and it's sometimes hit or miss for me, as far as getting those set up, and I don't know. I'm not sure if it was a problem on the USB drive end of it or it was a PEBCAC error.
if you do scroll down on that website, so at pendrivelinux.com, and you scroll down, then it does give a little bit of a breakout that they didn't have this previously when I was on the site, but it says if you're using it from a Windows computer, then it'll show all the tutorials and the tools to use from there or from a Linux computer. Or if you're going to be running it on emulation programs, you know, like VirtualBox or different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a couple that are just the USB creators. So this site is more than just a list of USB booting things. It's tutorials on how to use them and all a bunch of different stuff. So it's a really nice site.
Mm-hmm. It's been around for years.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, I knew it for a long time. And then it was 5 years ago is when I started into doing this more and more. And I would say this website's been around for 10 years at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says copyright from 2006 to 2016.
10. That must be 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or maybe 11. something like that. So, cool.
All right. Well, that's about as much as I had to say about it.
Yeah, no, I think that covers a lot of it. So, look forward to some listener feedback, more suggestions. If they have some people want to share some tips and tools what they're using, so go ahead and send us an email if there's something we overlooked or missed. That'd be some great information. Maybe we'll add it to the list here.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Yep.
So we're done, right? All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 186.
USB install. Booty.
Right. Yeah. USB bootables.
USB right. bootables. That's it.
Unet boot.
Not to be confused with consumables.
Yes. Right. USB consumables.
All right.
This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time, we think.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Honky Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.